Welcome, everyone, to Heartbeat Theater. This is your host, C.P. McGregor, inviting you to be the guest of the Salvation Army for the next half hour. Last week, we brought you the first part of Portrait of a Prophet, the story of Samuel Logan Brengel of the Salvation Army. A story of an inspired man who took God's hand and went among men and preached truth to them and was believed. Now we bring you part two of his story, adopted from Clarence W. Hall's book by Roger Rooney and starring Les Tremaine as Sam Brengel. Listen carefully and see if you can't hear some of the wonder of this man as we begin part two of Portrait of a Prophet.
One May day near the turn of the century, a wedding took place in the home of the Swift family. Elizabeth Swift, the daughter of a once wealthy banker, married Samuel Logan Brengel, a young, well-educated evangelist. Elizabeth was a very active and devout member of the Salvation Army. Sam, too, would be a full-fledged Salvation Army officer in a matter of a few months. Prior to the wedding, the marriage couple made a solemn pact. An agreement to always place God and his work on earth above all else.
Sam sailed for England. The Salvation Army was in its infancy then. There were no training centers in America. Sam would eventually be trained at the training garrison, but first he paid his respects at the Army's international headquarters in London.
Sit down. It's good to see you again.
General Booth, you do remember me.
Yes, I recall our meeting in America, in Boston, several years ago.
I'm very happy you remembered. Well, General, I have come.
Yes, you have come. You have dropped a promising ministry and traveled 3,000 miles to give yourself to the Salvation Army.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's very gratifying, sir. But frankly, I have some doubts.
Doubts, General?
Brengel, you may not fit in. You have been your own boss too long, and because of that, I don't think you'll want to submit to Salvation Army discipline. We are an army, and we demand obedience.
General, I have received the Holy Spirit as my sanctifier and guide. I feel he has led me to offer myself to you. Give me a chance.
You want a chance at hard work and self-denial? Remember, the greatest of all must become the servant of all in this army.
General, it is true, at one time I may have tried to seek a place for myself. That was before I entered the ministry. Now I realize that my only way up to heaven is by going down to the lowest of the low. This is what I want to do.
God bless you, my son. And perhaps we'll make a Salvation Army officer out of you after all. You'd better get over to Bramwell as soon as you can.
That I will, General. Thank you very much.
And Brengel.
Yes, sir?
Don't take any vows upon yourself too hastily, will you?
No, General Booth. I won't.
Samuel Brengel, you are what we call here at Clapton Training Garrison one of the dangerous classes.
How so?
It's not a derogatory remark, you understand.
I understand.
It means you'll probably stay with us for a year or two, and then you'll get out. In that case, you'll have just lost all of that time.
Chief Bramwell Booth, this is not a whim or a snap judgment on my part. My wife and I have given this some very serious thought.
Nevertheless, we really think you may as well stay out.
No, I have no intentions of staying out. General Booth has agreed to give me a chance. Why can't you?
Very well, I will, Brengel, since you're so determined. But you realize you'll be treated with no special favors.
I am aware of that.
In that event, you'll report to Leamington, one of our field training depots.
I will leave whenever you give the order.
It will be in a day or two. At Leamington, you may be interested to know, the new recruits inherit the most undesirable chores.
Well, that's only natural, I'm sure.
Well, you may even end up blackening the other cadets' boots.
Sam? Sam's beginning as a cadet might have been just a little out of step, but he soon caught the spirit and threw himself into his work, just as he had done at Boston Theological Seminary. He had occasion to preach and conduct holiness meetings while a cadet. His superior officers, as well as General William and Chief Bramwell Booth, watched him closely. When his training period was completed, General Booth gave his criticism.
Two things, Brengel.
Yes, sir.
You have a wonderful gift for speaking, but your sermons are too lengthy, too long-winded. Shorter, you understand? And with more blood and fire.
Yes, sir.
More blood and fire. Then there's this matter of business and organization.
Oh, that has always been my weakness, General. I don't have much talent along that line. I've never held an executive position in my life.
Well, work at it. It's a necessity. When you have only a little, to do a lot takes very careful planning.
Yes, General. I shall try earnestly, and I know my wife will help me a great deal.
Excellent. I know I can depend on you. Oh, the time flies so quickly. Do you realize it was over 6 months ago when you first came to visit me?
Yes, I recall our first meeting quite vividly.
I admit I tried to discourage you. But now you are a full-fledged officer and on your way back to America. Now I encourage, not discourage, Brengel. There is so much to be done in America. I see our ranks expanding and growing. You'll play a big part in that expansion, I know.
I will do my best.
God bless you. I believe you will.
Sam's first three assignments were small, underdeveloped corps offices. No officers, poor buildings, and only a handful of soldiers. Some of the members were dedicated, others only mildly enthusiastic. Some prone to petty jealousies. An experienced corps officer would roll up his sleeves and quickly bring order out of chaos, organization out of disunity. Sam, an inexperienced corps officer, accomplished the same ends in the best way he knew how. But it wasn't easy.
How many do we have here is not the question. What kind of soldiers do we have here? That's important. I must strengthen spiritually the members we do have and work from there. The man first, then his work.
When an unscrupulous landlord evicted the army from their meeting hall...
We'll find another hall. In the meantime, we'll hold open-air meetings.
Just before our first child was born, Sam was informed that he was to command a new corps. The time and place to be announced later. Sam was given a much-needed furlough. He hurried to Amenia. We spent many happy moments together. Our baby was born, and my health improved greatly. But Sam was not one to take to idleness.
Darling, have you seen the postman yet this morning?
No, dear. Oh, you are anxious, aren't you?
Yes, Elizabeth, I am anxious to get back to work. I'm curious, too.
I know.
And how about you, dear? You feeling stronger?
Oh, yes, indeed. I'm ready, Sam. Whenever you receive your orders, your family will be ready to follow you to whatever part of the country you are sent.
Oh, I'm very thankful for that.
Oh, will you answer the door? I'll look in on the baby.
All right, Elizabeth.
Sam? Well, that telegram... Is that it, your new assignment?
Yes. This is it.
Well, Sam, you seem disappointed. Let me see it. You're appointed as officer in charge of Boston No. 1 Corps. Boston 1. Sam knew Boston 1. He'd frequently attended meetings there before he joined the Army. This Salvation Army building was located in a narrow, noisy street in the shabby west end of town. Just across the street, one of the most disreputable saloons in the city did a thriving business. Upstairs, over the Army Hall, the quarters were scarcely better than a hovel. Another fact that would make the appointment a living martyrdom was that, in Boston, Sam had a wide circle of friends. Would they come to his meetings to see his poverty and think how the mighty had fallen? Would they sniff the air in a superior manner, or, just as bad, pity, condescendingly? Boston One, therefore, stood for a cavalry for which Samuel Brengel was not prepared.
Boston One. Oh, God of all places. Is this what you have chosen for me? Must I face the rowdies and the unbelievers just as the Apostle Paul faced his enemies when he returned to Jerusalem? Yes, of course, that's it. This is another test.
Yes, dear Lord, I will be faithful. I am not only willing to go to Boston and to suffer there if necessary, but I am willing even to die in Boston for thee.
Little did Sam Bringle know just how close to dying for Christ he was to come.
That was the first act of Portrait of a Prophet, Part 2, with Les Tremain as Sam Bringle. Sam Bringle walked a road that few others have cared to follow in this world. It's a road that demands the best of a man and has no time for the wasteful trivialities which, we must all admit, occupy much of our time. It's a road that requires the courage to ignore ridicule, the strength to overcome opposition, the faith to rise about failure. These qualities don't apply just to men of God. They are requirements for any leader. But men like General William Booth and Sam Bringle found them vital in their great work. The Salvation Army needs more leaders like these men. Needs them now. Men and women as officers in the army of God. I think it's worth your thinking about. Now, Act 2 of Portrait of a Prophet, Part 2 with Les Tremain as Sam Bringle.
Sam, our baby, and I moved to Boston No. 1 Corps. Vigorously, Sam set to work to improve and build up the Corps. Sam would quickly take care of the practical problems as they came up, and then he would combine a Bible reading session with a fired-up prayer meeting. Soon as outsiders began to take notice of the zeal and spirit of the Corps, more and more soldiers joined the ranks. With all its surrounding poverty, that little Salvation Army hall became noted for its all-day holiness meetings. Once a month, Salvationists from all the Boston Corps attended, as well as all the teachers and preachers of holiness that New England then possessed. But the notorious saloon across the street still remained open. Almost nightly, a certain element that delighted in heckling and catcalling would enter the hall while the services were in progress.
No!
One night, when Sam was alone, he heard a commotion and hurried to investigate.
Hey, I'm going to see the church man. The sign says welcome, so I'm going in here. Hey, Salvation Army man. Salvation Army man, aren't you going to welcome me in?
What's going on here?
There you are. The sign says welcome, brother, so here I am.
All right, my good man. You are most certainly welcome, but not while you're in this condition. Now, please leave.
Leave? I just got here. Ain't I welcome?
I will welcome you tomorrow with open arms when you're sober. Now turn around, please. Out the door.
Okay, brother. If that's what you want?
That's right. No one who's intoxicated is allowed in here.
Intoxicated, am I? Well, I'll just show him. No one can kick me out and get by with this. Just wait till I pick up one of these paving bricks. Here we are. Yeah. Hey! Look what I got for you, brother!
The brick hit Sam's head full force. For days he hovered between life and death. For weeks, he was confined in a sanatorium for treatment. For the next 18 months, he had to forego active service. We moved back to Amenia while Sam recovered from his head wound. Here, Sam wrote some excellent articles for the War Cry, which were later collected into a little book entitled Helps to Holiness. In later years, Sam was to tell his friends,
I'm pleased that my writings have been printed in a dozen Occidental and Oriental languages, and even printed in Braille. And I owe it all to this brick that forced me to remain quiet for so many months. If there had been no little brick, there would have been no little book.
Sam delighted in showing our guests that souvenir, which she always kept for a keepsake.
You'll notice my dear wife has painted the brick, and also inscribed this text from Joseph to his brothers who had sold him into Egyptian bondage. As for you, ye meant it for evil, but God meant it for good, to keep much people alive.
When Sam completely recovered, he was soon appointed district officer for Maine and New Hampshire. His corps officer days were in the past. But as Sam was raised in rank, his duties and work increased. His hurried letters to me revealed the breathlessness of a man with great energy entering a new work. He traveled much, conducted meetings, inspected corps, and dealt with his officers. He found it impossible to get to bed before midnight, and imperative that he get up no later than 4:30 a.m. Once he wrote,
"We are in a dreadful way, darling. My heart is heavy. I don't know which way to turn. Jesus alone knows what I am to do for my officers. I am confronted with piles of correspondence, meetings, deserted corps, sick officers, perplexed and disheartened soldiers, poor finances, as well as my care for you."
Yet statistics could not defeat him. For in his next paragraph he wrote,
"We gloried in a wonderful meeting last night. My heart is crying to God for a general revival all over Maine and New Hampshire. Pray for it, darling."
Others in the higher ranks of the Army must have sensed this need for a revival, too. For eventually Sam was placed in command of the National Spiritual Special. Sam, with the help of a few assistants and the cooperation of the corps he visited, would carry out a 3-day program that was carefully planned to give spiritual impetus to the officers, soldiers, everyone who attended the meetings.
The National Spiritual Special. Elizabeth, this is what I've wanted the most. But God, in his wisdom, waited until I had a thorough understanding of the Army. Waited until I was ready. Now I can devote my entire being to preaching and conducting holiness meetings.
Sam traveled to every state, and on almost every occasion he experienced gratifying turnouts. But because public information facilities were not developed so keenly in those days, there were times when the turnout was small. Once, only 45 people came to the opening meeting.
45? Well, that means there are several hundred empty seats. Very well. Let's begin the meeting and see if we can't stir up some interest in this city.
Some preachers might have dismissed the 45 and refused to speak to so few. Not Sam. Once someone asked him, "What is the minimum number you will address?" His answer?
"Well, it is my practice never to address less than 2. However, I may make an exception. How many did you have in mind?"
Generally speaking, when the National Spiritual Special came to town, it was a momentous occasion. Turnaway crowds were not unusual. And how the children loved Sam Bringle.
"Do you children know that Jesus loves you more than anyone else on this earth? Remember in your Bible story when he was resting and the children came to him?"
Sam had a way of winning an audience no matter what their age.
"When I come home, he runs to me with eyes dancing, bursting to tell me how he has helped me by weeding the garden. Then I go out and find that while he has weeded the garden, he has also pulled up my sweet corn. But I see that he has done it with a heart full of..."
On the National Spiritual Special traveled. The schedule was always booked months in advance. For a period of several years, he traveled from coast to coast, from Canada to the Mexican border. Next, a grand tour of Europe, and then back to cover the 48 states again. Of course, Sam was away from me and the children a good deal of the time, but we understood.
Yes, even in my early childhood, the importance of God's work was made clear to me. Dad was a prolific letter writer. He wrote to Mother every day and included messages to me and my sister. Dad always kept a diary, which made it easy for him to recall every detail of his trip when he returned home. And so my sister and I grew up, married, and started families of our own. During those years, I remember the times when both Dad and Mother suffered sieges of ill health. Once I was summoned to my mother's sickbed to hear her say,
"Get your sister and go to Dad in New York. He's had a serious operation."
Sis and I hurried to New York and stayed with Dad until he was out of danger.
Then we were obliged to quickly return to Amenia. Mother had taken a turn for the worse. Mother was quite weak, but she hung on until Dad was well enough to come home. The last few days and nights, we helplessly stood by and watched her fade away, unable to do anything except comfort her the best we could.
Elizabeth, I'm holding your hand. The children are here with me. Darling, are you trusting in Jesus?
Yes.
That was Mother's last word. We watched and we prayed. When Mother's circulation weakened, her fingers began to swell. We watched the doctor cut away the wedding band that had never been removed all these years. Inside, just as Father had it engraved many years before with the words, "Holiness unto the Lord." Quietly and peacefully, the end came.
Take her, God. This is the woman who loved you. Once she told me she would forego ever seeing me again, her beloved husband, if it meant saving one soul. Lord, she loved you above all else. Take care of her, as I know you will, until we can be together again.
My father missed her deeply for the rest of his life. Yet he was not one to go into hiding and mourn. A few days after the funeral, he began God's work again. He wrote a warm, comforting series of articles for the War Cry on death and losing one's loved ones. His deep love for Christ gave him solace during his bereavement. He wanted others to have the same. Then, back to the platform. Dad's sermons were always simple, vital, contemporaneous, and notably absent was any stilted language. His voice was mellow and pleasing to the ear. His eyes seemed to pierce the higher heavens or search deep into a man's soul. His eyes had many changing tints and hues that could alight with fun, and then suddenly they might take on a grave, sad expression that would color men's minds with sober thoughts. A child once said, "He looks like God." A deaf woman once said, "I couldn't hear a word of his sermon, but I saw Jesus in his face." The years passed. Dad was officially placed on the Salvation Army's retirement list. Among the notables at his retirement meeting was General Evangeline Booth, who was then a commander. After the speeches and the many well wishes, Dad stood up and with shoulders back, head erect, and eyes sparkling, he announced,
"I ask you now, truthfully, do I look retired?"
A short time later at the penitent rail, Dad was more active than the youngest man present as he helped and counseled those who came forth. A few days later, with a touch of humor, he wrote,
"Well, it took them 2 days to get me retired. And now I'm beginning all over again. In fact, I began yesterday preaching my first sermon at the National Convention of the Christian Alliance. Calls have been coming in, and I already have tentative engagements which will keep me busy up until the fall of 1933. It looks like my retirement was something of a joke, doesn't it?"
Dad always took care of his physical health. He exercised every day. He knew how limited his work would be if his health ever faltered. But it did falter. The after effect of the rheumatic fever he suffered years ago while touring in Switzerland began to plague him, as well as the results of a recent automobile accident. He found it increasingly difficult to travel and make his appearances. He truly knew the meaning of suffering. And he was finally urged by his doctors to cease all public activity entirely.
"Captain Andrew Brown, Tanganyika, Africa."
Now Commissioner Brengel was forced to send his messages, his words of advice and encouragement to his friends and Salvationists all over the world by way of his letters. This activity, too, was finally curtailed when his eyes began to fail. He was forced to dictate his letters when possible, which he disliked. But what he missed the most was his daily Bible reading.
Dear General Higgins, my eyes are bad, and I'm getting weaker. But hallelujah, on I go to see the King in all his beauty and the land that is afar off, and not far off.
Dear Commissioner Brengle, how we miss you in the field. But as you know, the romantic era we love is disappearing. Religion, softly suffused by emotionalism, is being replaced by a quiet, coldly analytical outlook born of this scientific, materialistic age.
Yes, I suppose we must change to meet the times. But there are some things that are changeless. The character of God, of sin, of the devil, and God's redemptive plan. On these, we can brook no argument, give no quarter, admit no change.
It happened while Dad was staying at my home. He suffered a severe heart attack. He remained conscious for only a few hours and then slipped into a coma. All over the world, the Salvationist and his friends prayed that he be spared, but he did not rally. On May 19th, the day before his death, we thought we saw a look of animation come over his face, the shadow of a smile. This was May 19th, his wedding anniversary. The next day at 1:30 p.m., his spirit took flight. Telegrams, cables, and messages by every means of communication poured in. Huge crowds attended his funeral. General Evangeline Booth was kept from being present only because she was engaged in an extensive tour of duty in Switzerland. She cabled, "It is fitting that one who has made spring to break in countless multitudes of souls should be laid to rest amid the flowers of May." General Higgins spoke at the funeral, which bore no traces of gloom. In a magnificent manner, he summed up the life of my father.
I want to strike a note of gratitude, a psalm of praise for this great man, the dearest comrade we've ever had. Commissioner Samuel Logan Brengle came to all of us as a friend, as a counselor, as a great soul lover and soul winner, as a writer, as a salvationist, as a saint.
That was the final act of Portrait of a Prophet, starring Les Tremain as Samuel Logan Brengle. Be sure and be with us again next week for another Heartbeat Theater story. Heartbeat Theater is a presentation of the Salvation Army and is broadcast overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Until next week, this is your host, C.P. McGregor, saying thanks for listening and have a happy week ahead.